This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, hootball,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
An incrinculent mailbag this week. Limits. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. You can get a hold of my tiny friend here by going on the fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. So why don't Mark and I go through the mailbag? Hold on, I'm having a coughing attack.
All right, Joe, let's do that. What is the most fascinating thing that was asked in the mailbag this week? I wonder. There's NFL legal tampering that is going on. There's March Madness that's coming up. Steeler quarterback news is always prevalent. Maybe an RMU basketball question thrown in there. We're going on Thursday.
Nope, none of that. But I'll tell you what was in here was this. If the Steelers, this is from Bobby. If the Steelers end up with Justin Fields and Derek Carr, who starts? I said it has to be Fields at the beginning because why would he come back here if he's not guaranteed pole position? Of course, wouldn't he seek a better option? Of course, that raises another question. Is there any team in the NFL willing to guarantee Justin Fields at least pole position in training camp? Anybody? That's my question right now. But if he has even one other option, where they're telling him, you're going to be our guy, and the Steelers aren't necessarily saying that, then he's going to go, right?
Yeah, I think it's plausible. I mean, depending on how much he likes the situation here. And, I mean, I wonder with the chatter, like, how much he'll talk and say, like, what is the likelihood that you will pick a quarterback in the first or second round? Like, if I'm Justin Fields, I'm asking the Steelers that. Now, how much of an answer you're going to get, that might be a completely different story.
Well, what about Derek Carr? Derek Carr, to me, is Kirk Cousins in a different helmet. I mean, he's a guy that rolls up numbers, but there's something unquantifiable that's missing. It's just missing. This guy's got, the last 2 years, he has 40 touchdown passes and 13 interceptions in 27 starts, but the numbers just don't add up to a guy that you look at and say, he's the guy that's going to take me to a championship, or in this case, even to a playoff win. Come to think of it, him and the Steelers might be the perfect match. Derek Carr's never won a playoff game. They haven't been competitive in a playoff game since 2016. How old were you then?
2016?
Yeah.
I would have been 14 turning 15. I was a sophomore in high school the last time they won a playoff game.
Somebody should tell the national media that the Steelers haven't been competitive in a single playoff game since 2016. And then Derek Carr, he's only played in one. Now, is he just a victim of being on bad teams, or is part of that him? You just have to wonder. It reminds me of Eric Carlson. It doesn't seem like a coincidence that Eric Carlson's never won anything of significance in his NHL career. He didn't exactly seem broken up over one of the worst blunders we've ever seen in the National Hockey League the other day in a bitter loss to the Maple Leafs. I don't know. There's something, again, with Carlson where you just wonder, the numbers are great, but what do they add up to when it comes to winning?
I've just never been a huge Derek Carr fan, and I heard Doran on the morning show today say that he heard that Derek Carr is going to possibly retire, which I think is fascinating. And if that is the case, there's no other competition for Justin Fields to go to New Orleans. I thought it was a foregone conclusion that the Saints were just going to move off of Derek Carr. You know, like, he's just kind of there. Like, all right, Derek Carr's our quarterback. We'll win six games. Okay.
Yeah, man. It's almost like a game. It's like a game show. It's if you're Fields and Wilson, and the timing of it also, you got to time it right. You know what I mean? Like, are the Steelers overplaying their hand right now? Are they just assuming that one of these guys is coming here? And what if they don't? What if they're making a bad assumption there? What if they both find something else they like more? And then it becomes a game, you know, of musical chairs. Like, am I going to get a spot? Should I take the first offer that comes along that at least gives me a shot if you're Justin Fields? Should I take what I have already with the Steelers, no matter what they do in the draft, or get another quarterback? Did I show enough there where I believe Mike Tomlin thinks I can be his guy, even without that, you know, 100% assurance? What do you do if you're him? You know, that a lot of quarterbacks who aren't the guy anywhere right now have to answer that question. What's my best move if I don't get one single team to tell me I'm the guy? Then what? Excuse me, limits.
Then you're just up the creek without a paddle if you're the Steelers. I mean, I'm getting to that
point.
Are
you, or would it be best if neither one of those guys came back and you got an Aaron Rodgers or a Derek Carr or drafted somebody? I'm not so sure they're up the creek. That's the other side of that.
Well, from what I think they want their options to be. They want either Wilson or Fields. If both decide to leave.
That's what they're saying publicly.
True.
Yes.
I was thinking about this earlier today. If both leave, I would be completely fine with bringing in an Aaron Rodgers, and if it falls flat, it falls flat, and you're exactly where you need to be. Now, we know the whole Mike Tomlin, it's just not going to happen, non-losing season thing, whatever. But, I mean, Aaron Rodgers would come here and be entertaining. He has something left in the tank.
Well, there's one thing about Aaron Rodgers that would play here, is that he's the all-time champion of not turning the ball over, and that's music to Mike Tomlin's ears. A man named Joe Custer, I call him General Custer, for obvious reasons. Who had or has more interest in playing defense, Eric Carlson or Phil Kessel? Which is a tremendous question. I said it's the toughest I've faced in years, General Custer. I'm sitting here weighing pros and cons and remembering things about Phil Kessel, and it's a tough one. I compare it to myself and my interest in things like physics or algebra, like literally. If there was something to measure these things by, a gauge, I would have had less than no interest, less than none in topics like that. And that's where these two guys are with defense. Just none. Zero. But as a tiebreaker, I went with Carlson based on that unfathomable gaffe the other day against the Maple Leafs. A blind pass at the offensive blue line that gives them a breakaway and a goal with 0.1 seconds left. I mean, you almost have to admire it. It was a piece of art. So I'm going to give him the tiebreaker right now on who's less interested in defense, or who was, when you include Kessel and Carlson, who has to lead the league in assists on opponent breakaway goals. Does he? I mean, it's almost like they're design plays with this guy.
I just cannot believe the play that he made with the little back pass at the blue line.
It was away. Truly, it was a piece of art. If everything doesn't work out, literally to the millisecond, that goal doesn't happen. He put it right on the dude's stick in stride.
It looked like Neil O'Donnell in Super Bowl 30. Just a completely targeted pass that the other team could take away.
We have phone calls right now on what?
We do, on the quarterback situation. Somebody wants Aaron Rodgers here.
We'll take those in a moment. I'm in the middle of a mailbag here, Limits, and I don't want to be interrupted. I want to hear your answer to the next one. This was interesting. Joel Alexander, how familiar are local sports journalists with the actual scouts that the Steelers employ? They seem to be rather anonymous, yet play such a key role. Their wide receiver scouts seem to be some of the best. Who are their quarterback evaluators for the future? To which I answered, generally, I don't know that they break it down specifically by position. I think it's more areas of the country and, you know, things like that. I don't know if they have wide receiver scouts limits. But as far as who their quarterback evaluator is, well, lots of them. But in the end, the guy making the decision is one man. And that's Mike Tomlin. That was my first point. My second point was, when you look at the football personnel roster, for better or worse, it truly is a family affair. There Director of College Scouting is Dan Colbert, Kevin's son. Dan Rooney Jr. is the Vice President of Player Personnel. Casey Weidel, Andy's younger brother, is the scouting coordinator. And of late, another member of the Rooney family tree, Anthony, is a scouting intern. Oh. It's basically a family reunion in the scouting department.
Don't forget about the Hayward family. They're also a big part of the roster. And remember, the Edmonds family was here at running back. Termaine Edmonds and Terrell Edmonds and all the other Edmondses.
Well, this is a little more interesting to me because, I mean, you're hiring a lot of people in your football operations department who are relatives. I don't know if that's, is that good? Is that bad? I don't know.
Well, I think one perspective on that could be, like, we talk a lot about, you know, do the Steelers need a consultant, someone from like the outside of like the organization, the building, the family, to
yes.
be able to just tell them the true honesty that maybe like we are seeing from our chairs.
Right.
With that type of instance, you don't get that because it's all in the family, like you said.
A man named Kirk, is there any way we become competitive in anything in the next 5 years, or should we just be comfortable basking in the glory of the olden days? I said to him, are you speaking of all teams, Captain Kirk, or just one of them? Because you could be asking that about virtually any one of our teams. And I pointed out that 5 years is a long time, so any of them could conceivably bounce back during that time frame or not. But here's the problem. The Penguins need a full-on rebuild. No more of this half-and-half crap. The Steelers need a franchise quarterback. The Pirates need Bob Nutting to spend more on players. And Pitt football and basketball either need more money or new coaches or both. So we're kind of in a bad way here because those are pretty big things that each team needs, correct?
Yeah, pretty substantial. And it doesn't seem like Pitt. I think Pitt might be in the worst position out of any of them at the moment.
Why? What sport? Just both?
Yeah, I mean, I think football, with the way that the landscape of college football is going with NIL, Pitt is also in a... I mean, the ACC is not a bad conference, but the SEC and the Big Ten just have so much power.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's going to be so hard for Pitt to be able to overcome that. And, I mean, maybe they're trying to expand the playoff and everything and make it different with 14 teams, two ACC teams would get in. But Florida State and, what is it, Miami, Clemson, they're talking about legislation with the ACC. They're trying to get the fair and proper money that they want, and there's going to be a deal that's made between the ACC and those schools to get them more money.
Yeah.
I mean, Pitt is just in a really tough spot right now for football there.
Well, basketball, too. And Jeff Capel spoke about this in the Post-Gazette today. Stephen Thompson, ACC's perception, performance problems rooted in money. So you had Capel talking about this. He's finally acknowledging that the ACC is down. And it seems very obvious at this point. And he talks about the other conferences spending more. And within the ACC, he talks about Louisville spending more. So I'm a little bit sort of two minds with these comments. On one hand, it is true that this is pro sports. You largely get what you pay for. On the other hand, you kind of have to make do with what you have sometimes, and you got to spend the money you have on the right players. Did Pitt basketball do that? I think we could have an argument about that. And also, when you hear Capel talk about this, part of me reads it like it's, I'm not the problem here. The problem is we need to pay more for players. Is he right about that? Or is he trying to escape blame? I think that's a legitimate question.
I think a little bit of both can be fair. Like, Capel, coming into this season, and I like Jeff Capel a lot, like, we knew that this was the most, one of the most talented Pitt teams of the Jeff Capel era. Maybe the most talented team that he had. You could argue last year because they had a guy that went in the lottery with, you know, how the success that Bob Carrington had. But this year, like, they've not been able to put it together, whether that's injuries down the stretch, and part of that is just Capel's job coaching in the last 10 minutes.
Well, the Dunn injury definitely had a profound effect on the team, no doubt. But I also think Capel is indicting himself there by saying, yeah, there's a couple teams. Well, he pointed to Louisville, which is ranked 14th now, and how they've turned it around, and Capel said they had to pay well to get this team, which has a lot of experience and talent from the transfer portal, as Steven writes. But aren't you then saying the rest of us are kind of in the same boat in the ACC? Okay, if you're in the same boat, as far as NIL, at least a lot of you are, then why aren't you doing better? Because forget about how the ACC stacks up with other conferences. How is Pitt doing if their payroll, so to speak, is similarly situated to a lot of teams in the ACC?
Well, I think the main difference is like Duke stands on its own, Carolina stands on its own. I still think Louisville, because that is just such a huge brand in Kentucky.
All right, that's three. What place is Pitt in?
10th, 11th
there,
right now.
There you go.
It should still be higher. Like, they should be competing with the likes of Wake Forest, Syracuse, and I mean, those teams are also down this year. But it's a huge part of, and I think, why the SEC has risen in basketball, because the SEC dominated for years, and now it's the SEC with Auburn, Alabama, whatever. I wonder if that's partly because now that NIL is a legal thing, they're just shelling out money like they do in football, now to the basketball players in the SEC can thrive.
Yeah, find a way to win with what you got is what I would say, at least within the confines of your own conference. Finally, we have Christian Svobotka, I believe is the name. Which Pittsburgh team has been the biggest disappointment of 2024/25? So I said, all right, we're talking about the 24 Steelers, the 24 Pitt football team, and the 24 Pirates. And then we're talking about the current Penguins, 24-25, and the current Pitt basketball team. So which of those is the biggest has been the biggest single disappointment, oh, limitless wonder?
What a question that is.
A great question.
Especially all the collapses that were had.
Has every one of those teams collapsed at least once? I think so.
Yeah.
Steelers certainly did. The Penguins around the... Well, the Penguins, their whole season's been a collapse. The Pirates collapsed in August. Pitt was 7-0 and collapsed. And the Pitt basketball teams lost 10 of 14. It's been the year of the collapse.
I think basketball, because the expectations were, and they, I mean, at one point they were a 6 seed by a lot of projections to be in the tournament. The Steelers, I expected to go 10-7. They did. The Penguins, I didn't think would make the playoffs. They're not. And Pitt football, my expectations were 7-5. Unfortunately, that's where it ended up being, right around that area. So probably basketball. I did not see them missing the tournament coming.
Yeah, me neither. All right, Limits, you told me there's a couple of quarterback questions coming in on the phone lines. And then I want to talk a little Ricard Raquel because, well, I have thoughts, strong thoughts on that in a moment. But first, let's go to the lines.
Here is Ken in South Park.
Hey, Ken, what's up?
Hey, Joe, thanks for taking my call.
Do you golf?
No, I'm a hacker.
All right, I was going to have you treat me to a round at South Park, but I guess that ain't happening. What's on your mind?
I usually get kicked off of golf courses.
It sounds like you might be. What's up?
I don't understand. How can the Steelers sign a reputable wide receiver who doesn't know who's going to be throwing the football to them next year?
Well, I think all that stuff's going to happen at virtually the same time here, with the league year starting March 12th, legal tampering March 10th, illegal tampering going on as we speak. So I think that person probably will have a good idea of who's throwing them the football. Limits, next.
Here is Rick in Pittsburgh.
Hi, Rick. What's up? Not that they'll be happy about who's throwing them the football. Don't get me wrong. And the real part of that story is, does a receiver of any repute want to come to Pittsburgh and play in Mike Tomlin and Artie Smith's offense, where your best receiver might be George Pickens, who hasn't exactly been Mr. Dependable so far? So that's legitimate. Go ahead, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fine, guys. Hey, listen, you like Aaron Rodgers because, or the Tomlin likes Aaron Rodgers because he doesn't turn the ball over. The Rooneys love Aaron Rodgers because you imagine if he has even a good season, the number of jerseys they would sell for a first ballot Hall of Famer. And unfortunately, that is part of where the Steelers operate, you know, in that sphere of profitability. How are you going to find that quarterback? I want to ask you guys if you remember the season where the Steelers started off like 2-7. And we thought, oh, gosh, this is going to be the year we're picking in the top five of the draft. And then Tomlin wins 7 games in a row, and we're stuck in the middle once again. Do you guys remember the season?
Yeah, you're talking about the one like 2-3 years ago, right?
3 years ago, right, exactly. Weren't you, you know, you were almost excited for them to lose because you were like, yeah, we're going to get that next great quarterback.
Right, right.
Here's Tomlin just, win 7 games in a row and kills it for us.
That's why I want them to take a step back just for once. And I'd be on board with trading T.J. Watt. I've said this 8 trillion times. And Minka and Pickens and just going with the likes of Skylar Thompson for a year. And then if Tomlin can do if he can withstand all that and go 9-8, then you put him directly into the Hall of Fame. But I would, from an organizational perspective, just take a step back and reload with the draft in Pittsburgh and go from there. It doesn't take that long if you can find the right guy in the NFL. But we all know that's not going to happen. So you're going to have to get a little bit more creative about this. All right. Top of the hour, we will get to that story of risers and fallers as far as quarterbacks go in the NFL draft. And some very high compliments for my man, Jackson Dart Limits, that I was sending you yesterday. I was peppering you and Pomp with all kinds of great stuff about Jackson Dart.
I just wanted it to stop. Stop, stop. Ding, 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 ding. My phone the whole day.
I'm gonna keep doing that today. But first, Rickard Rakell. What is happening here? What am I missing? Why are people on board with the idea of keeping him? Jason Mackey wrote that there aren't many good reasons for trading him. There aren't many good reasons or any for keeping him that I can think of. I would scratch Rakell tonight and make it very clear that he's gone on the block. I wouldn't put him on the ice tonight. This is a very valuable asset to have for a team that is allegedly rebuilding. He's arguably the top or one of the top three players on the board at a trade deadline when there's tons of teams who think they can win and want a top six forward. I mean, this is crazy talk at this point. I keep reading and seeing and hearing that the best reason to keep Rakell is to ensure that Sid's point per game streak, however many years it is, I think his whole career, stays intact. And that streak is amazing. And it's a test, although probably a bit anonymous nationally. It's amazing and it's a testament to Sid's incredible consistency. Like his consistency with points is akin to Ovechkin's with goals. They're both like Hank Aaron. Like there's not all these prodigious all-time point seasons, but they just keep racking it up. Ovechkin with goals, Sid with points, just year after year after year, like a metronome. It's amazing. But if we're going to talk trade, if I offered you this deal, would you take it? I'm going to give you this. Sid's point per game streak in exchange for a first round pick for a team that's rebuilding. I think I'm taking the first round pick a trillion times out of a trillion, and I think they might even get more. Rob Rossi, I read recently, doesn't think that they'll get a first round pick from Rakell. And he might be right, but I respectfully disagree with Rob there. I think they'll get a first rounder and more. That's my feeling about Rakell right now. He's playing the best hockey of his career. He's healthy, which he isn't always. He's also not always playing the best hockey of his career. He's an every other year guy. He's good every other year, and he's aging, and his contract is favorable, and it's time to go. He's never, ever going to sell for higher. You could say this offseason, is he going to be healthy? I don't know. Let me read you from The Athletic, a team by team. I'm not going to read all of them, but a bunch of teams that either still think they're alive or are building for the future, whatever, want top six players. Even Utah. The Utah Hockey Club, the prediction here in The Athletic is they will acquire a top six forward. They've stockpiled picks and prospects, and their ownership wants them to start getting players here. New Jersey Devils, Tommy Fitzgerald, prediction, they will acquire a top six forward. I'm going to keep going here. The Montreal Canadiens, they want to acquire a roster player with term. They're open to doing, quote, a lot of different things. They have long-term needs at center, right defense, and perhaps even a top six winger. Los Angeles Kings. Prediction from The Athletic. They will add a scoring winger. Do you want me to keep going here, Limits? The Detroit Red Wings, who at this point in their rebuild, which was built around tons of top picks, not all of whom have panned out, but they're finally starting to kind of get it. Prediction, Detroit will add a defenseman, and they also have a need up front. Man, if they would take Erik Karlsson, wouldn't that be something? If anybody would, so he can help another team give breakaways to the opponents. The Calgary Flames, they will emerge as the biggest trade broker at the deadline, and they'll buy. I could keep going here. I don't know how many years there have been this many teams who have a legitimate chance to actually win it all, who are right for believing that. In the East, it's Toronto, Florida, Tampa, Washington, Carolina, Jersey. I think you have six teams who have legit designs on getting to the final. In the West, you have Winnipeg, Dallas, Minnesota, Vegas, Edmonton, the Kings, and I think the Avalanche. All of them. Then you have a couple of other desperate teams. Vancouver. The Fighting Dickie Tockets have fallen out of playoff position, and you know that Jim Rutherford has that itchy trigger finger. You know he does. I just talked about the Utah Hockey Club, where they want to do something. Rickard Rakell will get you a first-round pick and maybe a player. Seth Jones, who was under Rakell on the listing of most coveted trade targets, again, over at The Athletic. They got a first-round pick and a 23-year-old goaltender. Think of him what you will in Spencer Knight. They got a first-round pick and a 23-year-old NHL goalie. This talk of Sid needs to have a winger, so you need to keep Rakell. For what? I imagine Sid is very, very unhappy these days. They're losing all the time. He's one of the greatest competitors in the history of the league. At this point, I'm not sure it makes a difference whether you keep Rakell or not for Sid's happiness. Plus, don't you think Sid can get this on his own? He'll still have Brian Rust on one of his wings. He'll still play on the power play. I can't even believe I'm indulging this talk of a first-round pick compared to Sid's point streak, point per game for his career. What are we doing here? Have we lost our minds? They have maybe the number one target in the whole NHL, and they're clearly, whether by choice or not, a rebuilding team. I disagree with Josh Yeo, who recently said, and I love Josh and his stuff. He's great. Who said, I don't know who needs to hear this, but the Penguins are in a full-on 100% rebuild. No, they're not. They're not. They're trying to walk that line. They're 50-50, 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Get as close to all in as you possibly can. And yes, the no movement clauses around here make that more difficult. That's why we're paying Kyle Dubas the big bucks. But Rakell doesn't have one. I see no argument unless you can't get a good deal. That's obviously the one argument. If you can't get a decent deal for the guy, then you keep him. But I'm 99.9% convinced that they can and will. Based on what's already happened in the league, based on the history at the trade deadline, based on the fact you're talking about a 30-goal scorer who's playing the best hockey of his life and is signed at a reasonable price, this is better than a rental. It's completely derelict of duty for Kyle Dubas to keep this guy around. His team stinks, and it's not getting better anytime soon. For anybody who thinks that a Capitals-type rebuild is on the horizon here, the Capitals missed the playoffs 1 year. They couldn't get out of the first round for six. They missed 1 year, and now they're the best team in the league, at least points-wise, maybe second to Winnipeg now. That's not happening here next year. The Penguins are going to be horrible next year. So can somebody please tell me why you would keep this prized of an asset when this is precisely, like this is manna from heaven, that you have this? Who would have thought Ricard Raquel would be one or two on the board at the trade deadline? This is like, this is, as a team that has sunk to the bottom, this is what you pray for, is an asset that everybody wants and is probably going to give you something pretty darn good for it. It's just, it's crazy talk with the Penguins right now. Between that and what a wonderful job Kyle Dubas has done, it's like we're living in some alternate reality with them. He came here trying to win and signed guys or brought in guys with long-term big money in an effort to win while he had Sidney Crosby or while he has Crosby, and he failed so miserably. And we don't talk about it enough, how badly this guy failed and mangled things. And it's great he's got all these picks the next couple years. I guess we'll find out in 4, 5, 6 years whether he was right if he's still here. And that is what you have to do. I'll acknowledge that. But he's got to go further with it. He came in here. It's one thing if you want to try and win with Sid now to sign a couple guys to short-term big money deals. This dude went out and signed Tristan Jarry for almost $30 million over 5 or 6 years. He made a colossal mistake on Ryan Graves, one of the worst signings in the history of Pittsburgh sports, to multiple years in an effort to try to win. He brought in the reigning Norris Trophy winner, knowing it was going to cost him about $10 million a year for many years, multiple years anyway. And that's been a horrible, horrible blight on the franchise. This guy has done a terrible job. A D minus so far for Kyle Dubas, based on what the obvious objective was. Since the Gensel trade has taken kind of a turn, he is collecting draft picks. He is doing that. A lot of them not first round picks, although he could have two this year if the Rangers finish out of the top 13. That's good. But that's going to take a long, long time. Trade Raquel. It's a gift horse. Don't look it in the mouth. What happens when you look a gift horse in the mouth, Limits? Where did that come from?
I don't know, but the horse, I would imagine, is going to come after you.
Does he bite you? Is that the idea there? You
probably kicks you.
Why would you look him in the mouth anyway?
I don't know. You want to check his teeth? Maybe you're a dentist?
Can you look up that phrase? I'm now curious.
I'm curious what I'll find.
So it'd be nice to trade, you know, Grayslick and whoever else you want to deal. This is the guy, this is the prize, and this is the time to take advantage of it and strike right now. You have teams bargaining against each other. I want Sid to be happy too, but I'm guessing that the competitor he is, he's extremely unhappy right now, no matter what. They already took away Gensel from him. What difference does it make at this point? That's A, and B, he's got 65 points in 61 games if the career-long point-per-game streak is what has you all tied up here. Don't worry about it. He'll get there. He'll play on the power play. He'll play with Rust. Play him with Rust and Gino. Do that.
Never look a gift horse in the mouth means if someone gives you something, be polite.
Okay. Then I would say thank you to Ricard Raquel on his way out the door. That would be my act of politeness.
Very kind of you.
I mean, and for all this top line has done offensively, they're like a combined minus 70, okay? So I think it's okay to break them up at this point. It's okay to trade Raquel. I got a tweet again yesterday. Why are you advocating for that? Why the hell wouldn't I be? It's just crazy talk. It really is. 412-928-9370. Yes, Limits. Let's go to the lines at the end of the hour, even though it's technically the beginning of a new hour. Go ahead.
It is Ed. He's in Brookline.
What's up, Ed?
Hey, Joe. First of all, very quickly, as I understand it, if you were buying a horse, you would examine its teeth pretty closely. But if someone were giving you a horse, you wouldn't want to be so petty as to be that selective about the horse's teeth.
He's right.
It's a gift horse.
It also says that on here. Very good point, Ed. Ah.
Good point, Ed. Yeah.
So, Joe, I'm not going to change your mind, so please don't unload on me too harshly.
No, no.
But I want to offer a slight counterpoint about the Raquel train. This is purely coming from an emotional standpoint,
yeah,
because there is an emotional component to being a fan as well. And Crosby is, his legacy is very important to me. And the all-time, the gap between him and Ovechkin in terms of career points is only about 60 points. I want that guy to finish his career with more points than Ovechkin. I want that badly because it may be the only real claim as to being the better player. Well, it's not the only claim. He's won more cups and gold medals, but Ovechkin is going to have the goal record. I want Crosby to have points over Ovechkin. I don't want to keep taking away the weapons that he plays with. I don't want to handicap him again and again and again, and I don't want Ovechkin to have that particular career edge. You could get a number one draft pick for Raquel, and that guy could be a bust. But what's for sure is 20 years from now, you're going to want to say, this is how great this guy was. He was better than Ovechkin, which I believe he is.
So
it's an emotional argument. It's not a rational.
No, I hear you. I definitely hear you. But would total points really make that big of a difference to you? Sid crushes Ovechkin in points per game. And Will, I think Sid is easily in the top 10, I believe, in points per game. And Ovechkin is somewhere in the 30s. And then it just becomes a cumulative thing after that. Plus, Sid has played with guys like Brian Gibson and Connor Sherry. Brian Rust is still here. Like I said, just the season's gone. Just play him with Rust and Malkin. If the points are what interest you, why not? And by the way, what has you convinced that Raquel, who's an every other year type guy, he was bad when the Penguins got him, then he was good, then he was bad and injured, now he's good. What has you convinced that he's a guy, as he ages into his 30s, who's going to stay healthy and productive and help Sid get to where you want him to go there?
I'm not necessarily assuming that he's going to continue to be an every other year guy. I don't think you can predict either way. I just see a really good goal scorer besides Sid right now. And I, you know, how many seasons does Sid have left? Your point is valid. I understand it. I hate to see them continue to take, you know, line mates from him who can help him to be great. I want to see him be great, and I want to see as much of that as possible while it lasts.
I understand that, and I appreciate the sentiment, and I appreciate the call. I do understand that. I just feel like the immediate future of the franchise is more important, quite frankly. Honestly, and I feel like this is a prized asset that can help the franchise moving forward, including Sid.